This is a Dauntless Media Collective podcast. Visit dauntless.fm for more content.
Greetings, reprobates. One last After Hours episode to wrap up the season before I take some time to plan for my book release. Yep, Asian American apostate losing religion and finding myself at an evangelical university is due out April 18th, and pre-sales should be starting up in the coming weeks. I'm caving into the TikTok thing, I think, and I'm starting a channel for the book with me showcasing my quote-unquote life as an apostate, complete with cult and Satanism gags and parodies of like reality shows. I got some silly ideas, you know, you just gotta get it out there. Hopefully there will be some special guests along the way, so stay tuned for that. Or don't. Oh my god, I can't believe I'm doing this. I'll be doing one last wrap-up episode of season 2 here in a week or two to sort of recap where we are and assess and talk about what ideas I have for season 3. Got a lot of guests already lined up and a couple already recorded, so yeah, it's happening. Now today just happens to be the release day of my Twitter friend Beth Amadeo's debut memoir, God's Ex-Girlfriend. We recorded this, you know, a while back in anticipation of this day, so I'm releasing this today. So we talk about her story, which is awesome, and her reactions to the InterVarsity Christian Fellowship episode of Chapel Probation. Now, she went to Crew. Boo. So we're kind of like, you know, like enemies in the college ministry world, like Montagues and Capulets, or Sharks and Jets for the boomers out there. Pre-tribs versus post-tribs. You get the picture. Rival parachurch college ministry gangs. Actually, we are united today by our shared disdain for evangelical campus ministries. And we have very little good things to say about them, very few good things, but we have a lot to say in general. So, today, Beth, Gloria Beth Amadeo.
Cool. My name is Gloria Beth Amadeo. My pronouns are she, her. And I am a writer who also happens to be an ex-evangelical.
Who knew? Ex-evangelicals.
On this podcast?
I know. It's a first. We were talking earlier. Now, Beth here has a book coming out, and we'll get to that. But I think, you know, both you and I had the experience of trying to get a book published, and it was hard because nobody wanted to say anything bad about evangelicals. But I think the tide is turning. You know, it's in the conversation, or it's getting into the zeitgeist, the national mindset that maybe these people are not okay. Yeah. So I'm excited to talk about some things today. You were involved with Campus Crusade, which is now called Crew.
Mm-hmm.
They had a rebrand.
Yeah, they decided to rebrand because of the negative connotations between the words like Christ and Crusade and like all those things together. And Crew is like very much a organization of like optics. They want to like look as sort of like innocuous as possible because they want to convert like, you know, college students on secular campuses. That's their main thing. So, you know, being called Campus Crusade for Christ, like wasn't really helping them. Yeah. So, yeah,
they made
it easier for themselves. No, not at all. Yeah.
But Crew, dude, you're going to Crew? Yeah, it sounds cool, right? It sounds...
Yep. Uh-huh, so exactly, so like rowing or something.
Yeah, yeah, or Motley Crue. That's kind of an old reference. Strike that from the record. So when you were 18, And where did you go to college?
So I went to college in the Northeast in New Jersey at a school called Fairleigh Dickinson University.
Okay. And so there was a then Campus Crusade chapter.
Mm-hmm. Teeny tiny, really small Campus Crusade chapter. Yeah.
Wait, was there InterVarsity too and you had to choose, or was that the only one?
Nope. It wasn't as amazing as that. There was literally just one little Campus Crusade chapter and a few people who were running it and trying to get as many people in the doors as possible.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So did you go to college looking for a Christian ministry to get involved with?
No, I was, so I grew up actually in a secular home pretty much. Like, we went to Catholic church when I was growing up. And it was, you know, my parents like were Catholic, but it was more of a progressive Catholic church. Like, my priest gave communion to gay people, to divorce people, like all the things that you're not supposed to do. Like, I grew up with watching my priest do. And my mom would say, oh, he's really great because he does this stuff. And so, like, I grew up in a home that was, you know, it's much more progressive than the life that I ended up leading in college. But also, you know, when I was growing up, my mom, you know, I had, you know, kind of seen the ramifications of a prescription pill addiction that my mom had. And I was like, I don't want anything to do with drugs or drinking or alcohol or anything that could alter your mental state. You know, I felt like because of watching some of the things that had been happening with my mom and, you know, tensions that it was causing between her and my dad and the rest of my family, essentially, I was just like, substances are evil. You know how when you're a teenager and your mind just like hones in on something and that's how I got to live my life in order to like make it like make sense and live a good one. Like, here's the answer. Because when you're a teenager, there's always an answer. And as you get older, there's no answer. But when I was a teenager and 18 years old, really vulnerable in college, I was like, no drugs and drinking. That's the answer. So I was a part of I was sort of like what we called back then a straight edge. I don't know if people even use that term anymore. Yeah, but I was like super straight edge. And so I got to college, and during freshman orientation, a couple, you know, kids who are older than me, who are like sophomores, they were like, you know, staff members of freshman orientation. They played a game of Never Have I Ever. And they were like, never have I ever had sex with three people in a hot tub. And everyone was like raising their hand because they all had. And I was just terrified. I was like, I can't do this in college. I can't. Like, this is going to ruin my life. And I very like dramatically went down to the student center and I was just like, I'm afraid. Like, is college going to equal me having to join sororities and fraternities and all the things that I'm really scared of? You know, like, and, you know, I think the adult administrator was like, oh, my goodness, this poor lost child. Like, but another person had been listening, and that person happened to be the president of Campus Crusade. And she had been in the office at that time. And then she sort of ushered me into a room after I walked out of the student center. And she was like, hey, I just want you to know I'm a part of a club and we don't drink or smoke or do any drugs or anything like that. Like, we definitely live straight edge. Like, and I was like, you know, every other college student existed, that's like a huge turnoff. But for me, I was like, this is what I'm looking for. I just need friends. Yeah, sign me up for this club. And so I went, and she was like, it's a Christian club. And I was like, well, I grew up Catholic. Like, Christian is Christian, right?
That sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds fine. Like, it sounded pretty innocuous to me. And so I went, and everybody was reading their Bible and talking about the Bible. I was like, well, that's a little weird. We didn't talk about the Bible too much in my church. But so, yeah. So for about a year, I didn't really understand what was going on, I would say.
All the lingo, all the Christian evangelical language.
Yeah, they were handing me copies of like Blue Like Jazz, and I was like, what does this mean? Like, you know, Donald Miller. I had no idea what Donald he was Miller, talking about. Yeah, Donald Miller, that guy.
I read that book.
We all did. We all loved those guys.
I know. It was like standard issue for like moderate politically and theologically. I guess that was kind of cutting edge, actually. That was pretty...
It was. I think now they don't like people like Donald Miller, like evangelicals. I don't think Donald Miller's really in the cool crowd anymore of evangelicals, and they've since been like, he's been led astray. And
him and like Rob Bell and all those other...
Yeah,
it was going in an interesting direction. You entered this world of evangelicalism at an interesting time, because that was kind of like the end of the Donald Miller, Rob Bell, kind of this like new kind of thinking about Christianity, and then everything took like a hard right, like during the Bush years and during, and especially during the Obama years. So,
yeah.
What years are we talking here? Are you okay talking about your
age? Of course. Totally cool talking about my age. Yeah. So I was in the, I got into college in 2005. I converted in the fall of 2006. And so I was in college from 2005 to 2009. And I left the movement like around 2014.
Got it. Yeah. So Campus Crusade.
Tell me about it.
Tell me about the culture. Tell me about anything juicy. Anything.
Oh, so I mean, the episode that you did on Inner Varsity is really interesting, because of how, you know, they're both like college organizations, right? They're college ministry organizations. So they're really similar in a lot of ways. Like they're parachurch organizations. So I guess that means that they like basically are like these, they're essentially funnels for churches. The way that the evangelical movement like at large sees them is operating is like, okay, like we're this like giant organization. We come into colleges and we act as a conduit to get these like, you know, vulnerable college students like into churches, like siphon them into churches across the United States. Like Campus Crusade was like, you know, for me was an interesting, very like, it was insidious and it was also very alluring. And like, you know, the things that you talk about on the, in the Inner Varsity podcast in terms of like the good things that it did for me, like I was a super, you know, I was just a very scared young person, like a very scared, like young teenager who was just, I didn't know, I didn't have any framework for how I thought a healthy adult life like could look. I really didn't know. And they gave me this example, but they also taught me like how to be social in some ways. Cause I think I was so scared of other people that like, I didn't know how to be properly social, but Campus Crusade taught me like, they kind of gave me like a motive. They were just like, okay, the goal is convert everybody the exact way that we converted you. And I was like, cool, okay, I can do that. But the only way you're going to do that is if you seem like a normal person. So like, you know, it wasn't the same. Yeah, seem like, you know, so it wasn't like, you know, it's like, they, you know, we would look at people from the Westboro Baptist Church and we weren't like, you know, it's not that they're not believers, but they're not our brand. You know, branding was like a huge thing. Like they're not like us. And we don't want to give up, like, we don't want to be the people, you know, holding God hates gay people signs, like outside of like, you know, soldiers, funeral processions and stuff like that. No, we're cool. Exactly.
We're relatable.
Yep. We're relatable. And the whole like reason for that was that like, that's how you get people who end up being like more influential towards other non-believers in your movement to help you gain more converts. And ultimately, the same way you're siphoning people into churches, you're siphoning people into voting booths, like to vote the way that you want them to. So like, it's all like entirely strategic and really kind of scary and weird. And you know, the crew movement that I was a part of, that was like the things that were interesting about it and sort of different than crews on other, you know, in other parts of the country, even I think like college ministries in other part of the country, is that in New Jersey, the section of New Jersey that I was in, it was like actually quite diverse, our crew movement, way more diverse than any other crew movement, like throughout the rest of the United States. Like we would literally go to, you know, these big like crew events in Florida or, you know, Maryland or all of these places. And it would just be white people, white people, white people, white people. And our like crew was the only crew with like Black people, with Latinx people, with people, with Asian people. Like it was like the only crew that like wasn't just like a bunch of like white blonde kids. Like, and they loved that about themselves. And I think it made them like really come, like it made them butt heads with other crews around the country, because other crews around the country like just didn't really value diversity or want to, you know. And so my crew was sort of at the cutting edge in that way in like 2006, like, and they were intentionally trying to bring in like people like of color and trying to bring in Black people in particular. And they actually, we had this big meeting one time where they're like, here is this man, we're bringing him on staff, if you haven't noticed, this man is Black and we want more people like him on staff. And so they, like, you know, all of us, they were like, you white people, like, you need to be giving money to him and to us to, like, get more people like him on staff, because I, white guy, can't reach Black people the way that he can. So therefore, give us money and give us, like, support, because everything in crew is about raising support. And, you know, make this happen, like, make our crew more diverse. And, you know, every tribe, tongue, and nation, that's what the Bible says we're supposed to be converting. And I, you know, for the first time, I think, you know, I didn't know the terms for it, but I had my white guilt, like, you know, inflamed. And I was like, okay, yeah, I got $200 in my bank account from my work study job. Here's $100. Like, you know, like, you know, oh, no. And I look at that and I'm so ashamed now. Like, I am so ashamed that I gave money towards, like, essentially what I see now as, like, colonization. Like, it was just colonizing communities with, like, a white man evangelicalism. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so that was what a good was, place.
You, yeah. What I thought was good at that time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's interesting, right? Like, that crew. So, yeah, that's kind of, like, what was unique about my crew. And when you were talking about InterVarsity and, like, the ways in which you guys are on the cutting edge, like, that was definitely a way that I think we thought we were.
Yeah, no, we in InterVarsity definitely had, like, a superiority complex over then Campus Crusade when it came to the race stuff, because we were, like, especially on the coasts, east and west, we were talking about diversity and, you know, it was still fucked up. It was still sort of white centered, but it was, at least we're talking about it and trying to center marginalized peoples. But, you know, that superiority complex was not deserved. It's still a very performative, manipulative, you know, emotionally manipulative space to get you. I was thinking, like, your story, you were like, they're prime example of someone who just walked into crew, because usually it's like kids who grew up in church and they know they're going to a big bad secular school, so they flock to these organizations, and here you are, like, you were just fleeing a hot tub orgy and I don't want to go to the hot tub orgy. I got, and then the president of crew's like, oh yeah.
It's hilarious. My husband is like has never been in any, like, you know, sort of Christian setting, like, I know, right? I tell him this stuff and he's like, what on earth? He's like so shocked by all of it, but he's like, man, you were just right for the picking, weren't you? And right. I'm like, yeah, I really was. I was like, they were like, she's about to fall off this tree any second. Yeah. And they were just like holding their basket, like, underneath me. But I wasn't, at the same time, I wasn't, like, that easy to convert, because it actually took them a whole year to do it. Yeah. And the only way they did it was because of another person who, you know, I talk about, you know, is really, like, a main, like, central part of my book, was my relationship with a woman named Kate. And she was essentially, like, you know, my first friend, really, in college, like the first person that I really formed a strong relationship with. And she was evangelical and she was a part of crew. And when I had first, like, met her, it had been, like, in a separate class. And she just seemed, like, so cool and so down to earth, but, like, almost in a way that I was kind of, like, jealous of. I was like, I wish I could care that little about what people think of me. Like, you know, it's like, but I care too much about what people think of me. And she just had, like, something that I just an air about her that I think I envied. And then I saw her at crew and we became friends because we realized, oh, actually, we're really similar. Like, we both really like the Lord of the Rings. Like, you know, we both like really like Harry Potter and the Chronicles of Narnia and like Dickens. And we like to read and we like writing and we like stories. We love to tell stories. And like, we just became very, very good friends. And over time, you know, I kind of developed like a crush on her that I didn't understand at that point in time, because, you know, I think I was very afraid of, I knew that I was probably bisexual. And that was like the thing that about me that scared me the most. That was like a secret that I thought at that point in time I would probably take to my grave and never tell anybody. Oh. But yeah. But I did notice that, like, I was getting kind of jealous when she would have friends that weren't me, and I wanted to be closer to her than anyone else. Like, and I wanted her to like me the most. And we started sort of arguing about Christianity and about biblical literalism, because I noticed eventually that all these people in Campus Crusade, including her, like, believed that, you know, in biblical literalism and the inerrancy of the Bible, that it should, you know, be taken literally, you know, by their terms of what you should take literally, right? We all know that there's contradictions to that. Yeah. But she, I noticed, like, all of that stuff, and her and I would argue about it. And I always felt bad after those arguments. I always felt like I hadn't won, because at the end of the day, I hadn't won what I wanted, which was really her approval. There was no room for me to disagree. And so after a year of that, and, like, I think I kind of got beaten down enough to, like, finally listen to her and open my mind towards what she was saying. And that's when she, like, shared the gospel with me. And you know, it was complicated what made me eventually accept Jesus, like, you know, but a large part of it had to do with, like, wanting to be like her, wanting to be in her world more, wanting to be at the center of it, wanting to be her best friend, wanting to be the person that she admired most, you know? And so I eventually, like, after a year of sort of being, like, beaten down and had the seeds planted and all that stuff, I eventually accepted Jesus and became an ardent follower and very involved in Campus Crusade.
Then I think she endures verbal abuse for a season, and she endures perhaps being smacked one night, and then she seeks help from the church.
There is a pile of dead bodies behind the Mars Hill bus, and by God's grace, it'll be a mountain by the time we're done. You either get on the bus or you get run over by the bus. Those are the options.
There's nothing holy about writing discrimination into the law, and I am tired of communities of faith being weaponized, because the only time religious freedom is invoked is in the name of bigotry and discrimination. I'm tired of it.
Hi, I'm Nate, producer and co-host on the Full Mutuality podcast. Let's talk about inequality. It's everywhere. Whether it's rooted in race, gender, ability, or sexuality, there's bound to be an imbalance in power, influence, representation, and access. On our show, we want to explore areas of religion, culture, and society where justice is needed in order to bring about true mutuality. I hope you'll join us for some enlightening, fun, and at times uncomfortable conversations as we envision a world where everyone can live free from systems and structures that keep us from being truly equal. You can find us on your favorite podcast app or visit our website, fullmutuality.com, to find a list of all the platforms we're available on. Subscribe today, and we'll see you on the Full Mutuality Podcast. Hey, everyone. I'm Nate from the Full Mutuality Podcast. I wanted to take a moment to say thank you for tuning into this show. We're so grateful that you've decided to spend your time with us. Seriously, Dan, Gail, Jessica, Kathleen, Scott, and the rest of us here at the Dauntless Media Collective couldn't produce content like the show you're listening to without your support. I'd also like to invite you even further into the conversation. Right now, there are some great discussions happening over in the Dauntless Media Collective Discord server. If you're interested in chatting with other folks who are deconstructing and decolonizing the oppressive traditions that they came from, please feel free to hop on into the server. If you don't know what Discord is, it's a place where communities can gather online for chatting on a wide variety of topics. In our Discord server, we have channels devoted to general deconstruction conversations, some meme sharing, therapeutic venting about whatever religious bullshit you're currently dealing with, and even a channel specifically devoted to talking about the latest episodes of the podcast you're listening to right now. I hope you'll join us. You can log in directly to the Dauntless server by clicking the link in the show notes or heading to dauntless.fm and clicking the link in the top banner. See you there.
Did they still use, like, the Four Spiritual Law booklet?
Yep. The Knowing God Personally booklet. They called it the KGP. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I experienced that in my high school years in the 80s. We had these little booklets. There was, like, a Campus Crusade organization at our high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked around, God, this is embarrassing, different places with those little, law number one, God loves you and has a plan for your life. And
yep.
I forget the other three. But So yeah, so you were warned. You wrote about this in a blog, in your blog, right? I'm remembering this story now.
Probably. I probably did write about it on my blog.
Do you still have that up?
I still have my blog up. I haven't written on it in a while. I think after COVID happened, I just like stopped writing as much in it because I think everybody was just like tired. Yeah. But I need to actually start it up again. I also had a huge crush on Prince Harry at this time, and that's in my book too. And so my therapist was like, you should use SEO and talk about Prince Harry and evangelicals on your blog. And so I was like, wow, marketing Google strategies searches. From my therapist. Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, yeah. We should all us writers should just like tag famous people in all of our posts and all that.
Yeah. Famous people in the zeitgeist.
Let's talk about your book. It's coming out. So, we're going to try and air this right after your book comes out. So maybe it's already out while people are listening.
That would be amazing. So it's called God's Ex-Girlfriend, a memoir about loving and leaving the evangelical Jesus. And so I wrote this book. This book is really about like what, you know, it's my story of what made me vulnerable to conversion, all of those elements. And, you know, kind of, I think I wanted to highlight really that like anybody who has any vulnerability can be, you know, susceptible to any type of religious, spiritual coercion and spiritual abuse, like of any sort. You don't have to like have had a particularly horrific life like for that to happen to you. We're all vulnerable, more vulnerable than we realize, I think. And also I really wanted to highlight this time in college because I felt like, you know, and you talked about it a lot on the InterVarsity podcast, but like, just like these are formative years. Like this is when you're learning how to be an adult. This is when you're figuring out like who you actually want to be in the world. And organizations like InterVarsity, organizations like Campus Crusade, the Navigators, like even Young Life, like, you know, which even reaches into like youth groups and stuff like that. These groups like are all like specifically targeting people at these ages because they know that they're just beginning to form their adult identities and are vulnerable to this type of coercion. And I think that I kind of wished I wrote this book because I wished that somebody had warned me about groups like this in college, because instead they were just like fraternities and sororities. They're going to make you like jump off a cliff, like to like, you know, get into their social circle and all that stuff. It's like, how about like, you know, selling your soul to Jesus to get into someone's social circle? Like, you know, it's like there's more than, you know, I just think that like these are the things that like no one really prepares you for, and no one warns you about. And I know that I'm definitely going to try to prepare my children for things like this. I hope I can. So I wrote this book because I wanted to be able to talk about that exact period in life, and also just in general, what makes people susceptible, and also just the conversion tactics, like what to look out for, what they're doing, how that it's not just about walking up to people on the beach with track booklets, which I think actually is a pretty ineffective way of converting people. And that's not actually for the people that you're trying to convert. You're not real, like the goal is not actually to convert people when you're walking up to someone on the beach with a track booklet. It's to humiliate you enough to keep you in the movement. Ooh, it's like, right?
Oh shit. My mind was just blown.
It's really to make you embarrassed, like, and that that humiliation and that embarrassment makes you feel like you really sold yourself like to this movement, and you really got to believe in it. You got to stand behind it because you just humiliated yourself for it. So how much do you need to like make sure you really believe in it? So that was called Campus Crusade. I don't know if they talked about this in InterVarsity at all, but that was called initiative evangelism. Whereas relational evangelism was what was performed on me with Kate. And I think that that's a far more effective conversion tactic, like to get into somebody's life and become their friend and become like somebody that they really need. And then to like slowly sort of threaten to leave their life, like if you don't do what they say, or even just like, you know, just show them like how much more of a beautiful life they could have if they were like you, like, and the time that takes, that's a long game. And that's far more effective of a method of conversion than walking up to someone on a beach with a track booklet. So I wanted to tell people about that, you know,
giving the game away, Beth. Telling him the secrets.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do.
But that's so true. Like, I remember the last time I walked around with those tracks when I was in high school, I swore I would never do this again because I felt humiliated. It was the right word. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I'm walking around. We went to the local community college campus and walked around, and I watched my friend. I don't know what the terminology is, like reel someone in, or mm-hmm. someone actually decided to sit with him. This woman sat with him and prayed the prayer, and we were all like, yay. And I just felt dirty. I was like, mm-hmm. this woman was clearly hurting. She started crying. Because one of the questions in like the four spiritual laws, or one of the questions in the bit we were taught to do, was to talk about like brokenness or healing or something. And something in it just triggered something in this woman, and she starts crying, and then she prays the prayer and says she's going to go back to church. And I remember thinking like, we're never going to see this person again. We're never going to have interactions with this person. I don't know what's going to happen. We just really screwed up her day.
Yeah.
And brought out other stuff with no training. We don't know how to handle trauma. We don't know how to handle people who might be suicidal or who might be depressed. Mm-hmm. And we're just walking around like throwing these like religious grenades around and seeing what will stick. And you're right. It felt, and I remember thinking, if they can get me to do this, Jesus, like, It was one of the stages of my deconstruction. I still went on to college, and I still went on to InterVarsity, and I still led worship, and I did many horrible things. But I always look back on that day like, man, this is humiliating, just walking around with these tracks and approaching mm-hmm. people we don't know.
Yep.
I don't know about you, but when someone I don't know walks up to me and starts talking to me, I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Like,
Yeah, so, it's creepy. The way that we did it was we tried to gauge, I don't know if they did this in their varsity, but we tried to gauge the spiritual temperature with this like survey. So it was like a 10-question survey where we were asking them like, what do you think about life after death? Do you believe there is an afterlife? But the only question that really mattered was the final question, which is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you want to know God personally? And if they answered a 7 and above, then we would share the KGP, the Knowing God Personally track booklet, with them. If it was a 7 or below, we'd be like, okay, have a nice day. So it was like this super like well-oiled machine, like where it was like, okay, really only go for the ripe apples here. Like, you know, because maybe you'll convert them. You probably won't. This really isn't about converting them. It's about building you up in Christ and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it was like highly tactical and totally felt dirty. I think the dirtiest moment, the talk about feeling dirty in evangelicalism, the time that I felt the dirtiest is something, you know, it's a moment that I do talk about in my book as well. But there was a friend of ours who was also like, you know, and this is after I had already like come to know Jesus. So I was like a Jesus lover. And there was this girl who had joined our group who was hanging out with us. And she was kind of like me before I had converted, where she was like Catholic, just kind of looking for some friends. These people mm-hmm. seem nice. And then, you know, we were at like this like college and career group at a church by us. And she, you know, kind of like went outside and started talking to herself. And we were like, what's going on here? Like, why is she talking to herself? She started just walking around the parking lot in circles, talking to herself. And I realized at that point in time, this girl's having like, you know, a break. She's having a mental break. Like, there's something going on here. She needs help. Like, and my, you know, friend Kate was like, a demon's talking to her. Like, we need to, you know, pray for her. And basically, like, we followed her. She walked around in circles. At one point, she, like, picked up her cell phone, called someone, put the cell phone on the ground. Turned out it was her mom. Her mom was terrified, so worried, was like, she needs her medication. And Kate was just like, yeah. All right, medication. What's that going to do? Jesus is the antidote. Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I want to believe it's Jesus, but there's this thing in the back of my head that's like, she needs medicine. She needs to be in a safe space. She needs to not be out here in this church right now, walking around a parking lot where cars are coming in. Like, she probably needs to go back to her dorm. And And, you know, they were like, a prophet's coming tonight. Just so happens to be this woman's having, like, you know, a demon talk to her, and we have a prophet coming tonight. So they were trying to keep her as long as possible to, like, talk to the prophet. And it was this whole thing. And I just remember just battling so much in my own head with, like, you know, what I knew to be true and what Kate told me was true and what I wanted to believe versus what, like, you know, also the other thing I wanted to believe, which was that, like, what I knew was true, which is that, like, she needed, like, to be in a safe space at that point in time. So yeah, that was probably the time I felt the dirtiest, or one of them. We could probably, like, make a top 10 list of how dirty we felt.
Yeah. Yeah, we should write these down.
Yeah.
And none of them involve sex in a hot tub, unfortunately.
No. Unfortunately, weirdly, so. Those are the best times later on.
Right.
Down the road.
So, sorry, this doesn't have anything to do with the hot tub, but how do you identify now as spiritually or religiously?
I would say maybe like agnostic / atheist. I don't really know how the world is created. It doesn't really matter to me anymore. Like, it used to be the most important answer to any question, and now it's just not important to me anymore at all. So yeah, I would say I identify like that, but I have like an incredible amount of respect and love for progressive Christianity. And really like progressive, like, spiritual groups of any kind. Like, I love those people. And I would, you know, I think I had at one point in time after I left Christianity, after I left evangelicalism, being like, I'd still like to keep a little bit of this. And I went to like a church service or two, but then I just felt like I've given too much time and effort to churches. Like, I've given too much money. I've been given so many Sundays. I want my Sundays back. I want my money back. Like, I just started to see like a capitalist machine in it all. And I was just like, I just want to be left alone. Yeah. And so, yeah. So that's how I identify now. Wanting yes. to be left alone.
Left alone and give us our Sundays back.
Yeah. And money. If I could get all those tithes back. Oh,
what tithes, I would do. That $100 you gave to crew.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, there are definitely other hundreds that I gave to them. Again, I didn't even have much money. Yeah, with interest. Yeah, I didn't have much. I was a little college student working in the library. Like,
yeah, but they get you. You know, they lead you to believe that it's worth it. It's and mm-hmm. it will be returned to you, however many fold. In spiritual riches or
yep. whatever. And so. I do remember that was actually a part of some of Donald Miller's writing at the time, was like, you know, anecdotes on like, hey, I was like really poor. I had like pennies in my bank account, and then I gave money to the church, and then all of a sudden the cash started flowing in, like, you know, wait on God. And like the more you give, you'll get that back tenfold or whatever. And I did also like really believe that, at one point in time. And I think I believe that I saw that, you know, happening to me. I saw like things like financially getting better the more I gave. And I was like, it's true. It's true. And it was like, you know, Oprah's the Secret or something like that.
Oh, wow. So I really appreciate you coming on to talk about your story. And we definitely want people to go out and buy your book, which should be out now. And what's the title again?
It is God's Ex-Girlfriend.
God's Ex-Girlfriend. That's a great title. Thanks. I should have used that title.
Well, there's still God's Ex-Boyfriend.
Ex-Boyfriend? Yeah.
Yeah.
You notice that no one ever says that. All the Christian women are always like, I don't need a man, I got Jesus. And you never hear a Christian man say, I don't need a woman, I got Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all supposed to be married to him. No, it doesn't. It doesn't go the other way. They're too homophobic.
He's not the bridegroom for you as a man.
No, so, it's strange how they're it's true.
Not unless you say no homo before you. Mm-hmm. Before
he's my bridegroom. No homo.
Yeah, no homo. So, just some metaphor. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks for coming on, Beth. And I look forward to reading your book, and I hope everybody buys it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
So thanks to Beth for coming on to tell her story and compare notes to InterVarsity. I think we've established that it's a tie between Crew and IVCF. They both suck in their own special ways. So Beth's book's out now. Be sure to get your copy wherever you get your books. I'll have a link in the show notes. And this episode was brought to you by Hot Tubs, because hot water can be an evangelical and straight-edge nightmare.